Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Hellman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is an opportunity to get more in-depth understanding about topics and issues that really make a huge difference in our life, especially regarding our health and our well-being. So as always, the more educated we are, the more empowered we are, and the wiser our choices and decisions in our life. And I welcome you again to another opportunity to have a wonderful conversation. This is, as you know, a month dedicated to the awareness of breast cancer. I like to call it Breast Health Awareness Month. And I've been doing a series of interviews during this entire month. I also have on my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, many postings of various articles and interviews and conversations that continue helping us to get more aware, more educated about this topic that's of incredible importance and significance for the lives of so many women and, of course, their families. I have a great website, by the way, if you haven't been there yet, What Women Must Know, because once you just opt in there to my newsletter, you get these wonderful free special reports. You have access to many of my free articles, videos, lots of good information, lots of fantastic educational material that is really hard to get anywhere else. So if you're looking for ways to navigate through the confusing world of hormones and women's health, then I invite you to opt in and continue this learning healing process that we are all journeying on together. So as we are exploring the many facets of this month of Breast Health Awareness Month, we're going to be talking about a topic that I think is of relevance for so many people, not just women, people, because we're going to be talking about understanding the root causes that contribute to cancer, that contribute to a variety of cancers, all cancers, including breast cancer. I just want to say that in my own personal life, my father was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer many years ago. And the thing that is most shocking, at least for, was shocking for him, was shocking for the whole family, was how this suddenly appeared in his body, suddenly was discovered. A man who seemingly was healthy and thriving all of a sudden had this terrible diagnosis, which actually was the cause of his death. And as I talk with many women around the world, there is always that shock element when a diagnosis occurs, particularly in regards to breast cancer right now. So women are feeling healthy, they feel like they're getting on with their lives, and all of a sudden, in whatever way, something was detected, some lump was detected, something that made them take action, and suddenly they are having to deal with a diagnosis of breast cancer. And that confusion is there in their eyes. I see it. I hear it in their voice. But everything seems great. I have energy. I am looking good. I just don't have any problems with my health. And so today we're going to help unravel this mystery that seems to hit us out of the blue, and yet it isn't something that just has shown up, you know, overnight. It's something that has been brewing for a long time. So we're going to be exploring this world of understanding the root causes to cancer with Angelo Druda. And Angelo Druda actually is a renowned Chinese herbalist. He has more than 20 years of clinical experience with traditional Chinese medicine. He is the author of the book, The Tao of Rejuvenation, and he conducts a private practice in Northern California and is also a formulator of some really wonderful and premier Chinese herbal tinctures. So we're going to be looking at the origins and the etiology of cancer, particularly breast cancer, from a perspective of traditional Chinese medicine. And it's my pleasure to welcome Angelo to the show today. Hello, Angelo.
Hello, Cheryl. It's good to be here.
Well, it's good to have you back. You've been a guest many times on the show. I always love our conversations because I just love Chinese medicine, and I love the way you present it and your knowledge and wisdom. And I think this is where Chinese medicine really shines in our conversation today, in helping people to understand what are the root cause dynamics that give rise to breast cancer. And really the purpose of this whole conversation is to be preemptive in what we do, understanding the importance of taking care of ourselves so we can change our health destiny, as I like to say.
Yes, prevention, certainly relative to cancer, is certainly the way to go.
Right. Well, that's what we're going to be looking at. So from that traditional Chinese point of view, first of all, I think we need to say that traditional Chinese medicine has understood cancer and has treated cancer for a long, long time. Isn't that correct?
It is correct. In fact, you go back to the ancient Chinese medical textbooks, and they are, well, the first reference to breast cancer shows up around 600 AD. And so breast cancer was one of those diseases that early Chinese doctors were dealing with many years ago.
Yeah, that's interesting. We think of it as a modern disease, but actually it has been around for a long time. Of course, it hasn't been around to the degree that we are seeing it show up right now in women around the world. But they were aware of it, and they did know how to treat it.
They were aware of it. It was one of the one of those serious diseases that showed up in their practice, and many of the great ancient Chinese doctors have written about the subject. And yes, and if you look at the early textbooks, they describe the cause of breast cancer. Mostly they are pointing to emotional depression and emotional difficulties in the early texts, which is very interesting because nowadays, we, in our modern understanding, is really pointing to toxicity, modern toxicity, as a major culprit here in the development of breast cancer and the increasing spread of breast cancer as a terrible disease. But even before the advent of industrial revolution, and even before we lived in a world surrounded by manufactured synthetic toxins, Chinese doctors were seeing breast cancer, and they were treating breast cancer. And the original issue they talked about was depression, unhappiness, and a kind of chronic pattern of negative emotions.
So let's explore this and help us understand how all those things, you know, ultimately can show up as cancer in our body. And let's take us through this journey, Angelo. What is going on that generates such an imbalance in the body, such a life-threatening condition?
Well, if you look at the model, the explanation for the development of carcinomas in the human body, according to Oriental medicine, they describe a pattern in which there is a pattern of stagnation initially. In other words, we talk about a pattern of stagnation is there is the inhibition or the elimination of the free flow of blood, lymph, life force in the body. We develop a chronic point in the body where there is not free blood flow, where there is not free flow of chi or energy. And this point of stagnation becomes chronic. This is considered to be the root of the development of malignancies in the human body. And then they describe that at some point, this area of chronic stagnation becomes infected by a toxin. So just think about the body when it is receives a trauma. Let's just say you receive a shock or a blow to the body, a blow to your arm, and you get a bruise there. What's happened from that trauma? Well, the free flow of blood has been disrupted. The blood vessels have been damaged. The free flow of blood has been obstructed, and you get a bruise there, which is all that blood coagulating in a specific area. That's an area, and that's a form of stagnation that we can see. It's a very clear and gross form of stagnation. Well, according to Oriental medicine, there are invisible, more, less visible, let's say, areas of stagnation that can manifest in the body. And if we go back to those early textbooks on breast cancer, and they talk about emotional depression, emotional negativity, unhappiness, or just the word depression itself points to this stagnation. There is not this free flow of energy in the body. And so the depression points to that area of stagnation, and then some kind of a toxin infects that area of stagnation, and then what begins to happen is the development of atypical cells. In other words, normal cell replication becomes damaged. The DNA becomes damaged, and we get this development of atypical cells. We get the development of a carcinoma, ultimately. And this model of how a cancer can form in the human body pertains not only to breast cancer, but it pertains to most cancers altogether. There is some area, some cause that is preventing free flow, blood, of life force, of lymph fluids. You get this chronic area of stagnation, and then at some point there is some kind of an infection by a toxin that begins to damage the normal cell replication. In breast cancer, it's interesting to note that the human breasts are located just in front of the liver, which is has this primary function for blood purification. And this very sensitized breast tissue, very sensitive breast tissue, is located right around the area where this work of blood purification is being done by the liver. But in Oriental medicine, the human liver is also understood to be more than merely a blood filter. The liver is understood to be regulating the free flow of energy in the body. It's regulating the flow of blood in the body. And the liver is also understood to be the primary organ mediating our emotional state, our psychic state, our physical stresses. So the liver is very prone to becoming toxified. Its work is detoxification. The breast tissue, this very sensitive breast tissue, is located in the area of the liver. And so we can see in the practice of Oriental medicine, we can see when a person's liver is beginning to become stressed and this free flow is inhibited in the breast tissue and in the upper part of the body specifically, we begin to see a whole host of symptoms being caused by this problem with the proper functioning of the liver. For example, when we see women who have the complaints of premenstrual difficulties and they're getting these symptoms, the emotional symptoms that they get during the premenstrual phase, symptoms of breast distension, sore breasts, fibrocystic breast even is traced, as these other symptoms are, traced to improper liver function. And this is the function of the liver as a regulator, a free flow regulator in the body. So Oriental medicine, and as you were saying earlier, one of the beauties one of the virtues of Oriental medicine is the way it looks at disease, and it looks at disease in a very practical way, really sees this pattern of stagnation, this pattern of depression, and then some kind of an infection with some kind of a toxin. And it doesn't have to be a synthetic, manufactured, modern industrial toxin, because, again, this disease was present long before the Industrial Revolution. It could be a toxin caused by our own body chemistry. It could be a toxin caused by negative emotions. But nowadays in the modern world, we are surrounded, literally, by a host of things that are toxic, and we use all kinds of substances and things that are potentially toxic, and this seems to be one of the reasons why breast cancer has jumped from the levels that it appeared in early days to just the plague and epidemic that it is in modern times.
So let me just jump in here. So you were saying in traditional Chinese medicine, it was seen as a stagnation, which had a huge emotional component. Now, back 1,000 years or 500 years or wherever, when Chinese medicine had an awareness of cancers of all sorts, we didn't have the toxic exposure that we have today. It seems like there's a whole new set of players on the scene that are driving this development of this condition that didn't exist back then. I mean, I don't think breast cancer was all that common 1,000 years ago or 500 years ago, but it certainly existed.
It was not as prevalent statistically as it is today. And right, so it shows up even before we have all these industrial toxins of the modern age.
Right, so there were things going on. So are you saying that from your perspective in traditional Chinese medicine, that, there are kind of three things I hear you say. Number one, we have to look at the emotional component, that emotions play a major role in how our body is able to function. And when we're dealing with emotions or suppressed emotions or suppressed or long-term experiences of grief or anger, that actually will have a direct physiological effect on our body and our body's ability to carry on our day-to-day function.
Absolutely, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, as I was indicating, I mean, a big part of our practice here in our clinic is serving women who are treating imbalances in their menstrual cycle. And so many of these premenstrual imbalances can be traced to emotional issues. I mean, long before any of these things develop into what we call breast cancer today, we can see a disruption of the menstrual cycle. A woman can be going through a very difficult time in her life, and it absolutely is reflected in the menstrual cycle. It starts producing all kinds of imbalances that show up in the menstrual cycle, period pain, emotional difficulties as a woman leads up to the onset of the period, overheating, as I indicated, sore and distended breasts, and it can even change the timing of the menstrual cycle. You start beginning to see early cycles, heavy menstrual flows. So many times these things, women come in, and these symptoms are being generated simply by the emotions, the things that are happening in their emotional life, certainly complicated by poor diet or other factors. But so many of these factors, and I know you see it in your work too, is just how powerful the emotions are in affecting the state of the physical body.
So I think that's a really important point, because the tricky things about emotions is that so much of that energy can be suppressed. So, we are out of touch with what we're really feeling. We're out of touch with the hurts and the wounds and the stressors that have been going on beneath the conscious level.
Yeah.
And it seems that certainly in my work, and I was a psychotherapist before I went on to become a naturopathic doctor. In my psychotherapy practice, this is what the focus was, healing all those unconscious issues that kept showing up as events and circumstances and failed relationships and illnesses in a woman's life. or anyone's life, for that matter.
Anybody's life.
But it seems that this component, this emotional component, always gets ignored if you just go down the traditional trajectory of treatment and healing. But it has to be addressed. It's just very profound. You know, I did an interview quite a few years ago with a very renowned Chinese practitioner out of New York City, and I talked to him about breast cancer, and he said that he actually did a study of his patients. He had 300 or so patients who had breast cancer, and he was assessing them on many levels. And of course, with Chinese medicine, you can work with the pulses. You can see more of the dynamics that are going on. And he also was saying where in the breast the lump shows up is an indication of what energy system or what organs may be out of balance. And maybe you can talk about that in a little bit. But he basically said that every single woman that he treated, all his 300-some-odd patients, every single one, he said, was dealing with a lot of frustration and anger, and suppressed frustration and anger. It might have been frustration and anger about circumstances in relationships or with family members, or it could be just frustration and anger they were holding about themselves and their own feelings of being unloved or unworthy. And so it was kind of showing up as this anger and frustration. As it got deeper, into it, it showed up as ultimately the lack of love and appreciation for oneself. And he said that that was so profound and had to be acknowledged and dealt with for successful healing of the condition.
Absolutely. Consider in Oriental medicine, equates the emotion of the liver to be anger. In other words, anger is a sign of inhibited liver flow. And we talked earlier about this whole matter of free flow in the body. Consider a woman's menstrual cycle. The energy begins to build and change by mid-cycle. The energy is beginning to increase and build. The temperature is going up as the body begins to prepare to do the work of another period for that month. And women then have, the body now has to conduct higher levels of energy. If the women are going through emotional difficult times or emotional difficulty, depression, the energy gets stuck in the liver. What is stuck energy in the liver, trying to get released from the liver, trying to get out? Well, that's anger. I mean, what is anger? Anger are these paroxysms of release, this kind of fire. The life force, which is stuck and held in, is suddenly released in an angry outburst. This is all rooted in poor flow through the liver. And you were mentioning those emotions that are held in. Well, holding in all of those emotions, this can be the most destructive and imbalancing thing to do. You know, the people that find ways to express their emotions and find ways to creatively conduct their emotions do far better than the people that just sit on top of it. Because when you're just holding it in, and we have this capability of, as human beings, to just hold in all of this emotion. And this emotion is literal force. It's literal energy. I mean, if we put our hands in front of a fire hose shooting water out, we would feel the force of that, of trying to stop that flow. Well, the energies in the human body are profound and powerful. And when we contract down and hold in and deny the emotion, yes, these things are pushing that emotion in, and these are the forces that get contained in the body and begin to create the kinds of dysfunctions that can lead to serious diseases down the line, which is why, as you said when we opened the show, is the real true virtue of alternative medicine and the true virtue of Oriental medicine has always been prevention. It's always been about educating people to understand the principles of health, understand the principles that create disease, so that we can actually deal with these patterns of imbalance while they're at a very superficial level. That is the best way to treat a disease. Treat a disease when it is simply a superficial pattern of imbalance. Once it progresses to something like breast cancer or any kind of cancer or any kind of disease that involves organic cell damage, the healing of that pattern is a whole lot more challenging.
And I just want you to talk about that very briefly before we go to a break. However that imbalance may be manifesting, you know, in this case, we'll just say to breast cancer, however that cancer may show up, it may be just be a very small lump that is detected. But it doesn't mean it's just a small issue going on in the body that can easily be resolved by just taking it out, right? You know,
if there is a lump developed, then you know that you have now, there has been a chronic pattern of stagnation in that particular area of the body. That lump is a sure sign that things have stopped freely flowing, and now you're beginning to get accretions. You're beginning to get accumulations. And what are these lumps? What are these neoplasms? Well, they are accretions of blood and life force. So, yes, and it's one of the beauties of having a menstrual cycle. Women can begin to see the signs of these imbalances reflected in the menstrual cycle, which is itself a wonderful diagnostic tool. I mean, men don't have menstrual cycles. Men don't get the ready reflection in the body of these imbalances the way a woman's menstrual cycle can show. There's something wrong. There's something out of balance. Something needs to be addressed. And as I know you preach over the years of your work, and I preach over the years of my work, do not ignore these signs. Treat them at their first appearance.
And, yeah, there's so much to be said about paying attention and understanding how the seeds of these imbalances get sown very early in our life. Obviously, the emotional components, we know we all carry issues out of our family history and gather them as we go along. But we also don't truly appreciate that exposures early in life, and I see this in the study, and I wrote a book called What Women Must Know to Protect Their Daughters from Breast Cancer because I was looking at this growing incidence of breast cancer in young women. And, in that chapter, I kind of gave a hypothetical journey of conditions in a woman's life that could potentially lead to diagnosis, in her 30s or so. And it started with things that we don't necessarily associate with leading to chronic illness, such as chronic ear infections in a baby, and chronic ear infections, and then antibiotics, and then more ear infections, and more antibiotics, and then, compromised gut function, and so you have leaky gut, and you have allergies. And these just keep adding on another layer of imbalance, and all the things we do to correct it with medications and drugs and procedures without ever healing the root cause can put the body so out of balance, so compromised, so unable to deal with toxic overload and emotional overload, that it could, in the end, break down and result in something such as cancer decades down the track.
Absolutely. Consider the development of an atypical cell on the human cervix. It takes, on average, approximately 86 months for those atypical cells to become a carcinoma in situ, a localized cancer. 86 months, that's almost 7 years in development. Nowadays, we have the Pap smear, which can detect these things. But that was 7 years in development. These things don't happen overnight. And you're right, there's so much to be said for being conscious, for being educated, and not going into denial about these things, just, observing the imbalances and treating them while they're at a superficial level and easy to treat.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about when we come back. We're going to talk about some practical strategies that everyone can start implementing. I mean, the name of the game is commit to health now, not when something chronically appears. commit to doing whatever you can do in nurturing your body and detoxifying your body and creating balance and harmony now, so you only get better. So we're going to take a quick break. I don't want anyone to go away. This is a great conversation. You all need to be hearing it. This is Dr. Cheryl Silman. You are listening to What Women Must Know with my guest today, Angelo Druda. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Silman, and you are listening to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today. We are having another one of these wonderful in-depth conversations. Today we're talking to Angelo Druda. He is a renowned Chinese herbalist. He's had more than 20 years of clinical experience with traditional Chinese medicine. He's the author of The Tao of Rejuvenation and conducts a private practice in Northern California. By the way, you can go to tbmedicine.com if you'd like to know more of Angelo's work and to get a consultation with him or to get his book. It's over there at tbmedicine.com, traditional botanical medicine, and tbmedicine.com for short. So, Angelo, you treat many women in your practice who've had breast cancer. So what do you recommend? So what are the guidelines that you suggest to women who are dealing with breast cancer or at high risk of it? Give us some practical things that we need to know that we can be doing.
Okay. The in China today, many people don't realize that China is really the one country in the world that has institutionalized integrated medicine, which means in China they treat cancer with an integrated approach. It's just established and it's done that way, which means they will use both Western allopathic treatments and they use them in conjunction with traditional medical treatments. And this is how breast cancer is treated in China today. And there are many people in the West, many women in the West, who, if they are treating breast cancer, will take a similar approach. They will use an integrated approach. Now, people do just use traditional medicine to treat breast cancer. And there have been studies done in places like Australia that demonstrate the virtue in using traditional medicine. And then the studies and the statistics that are generated in China through the integrated approach are some of the best in the world relative to survival rates and remission rates. So my point of view and is always that if a woman has breast cancer, then Oriental medicine should be an absolute part of the treatment plan. And the primary treatment is herbal medicine. Acupuncture is certainly a part of those treatments, but the primary treatment for breast cancer has been and continues to be the use of herbal medicine, powerful herbal medicines that both prevent and treat breast cancer. Interestingly enough, I mean, one of the virtues of Chinese medicine that many people know about today is its usefulness and effectiveness as a non-invasive form of gynecological treatment. And really, if you look at this whole development of gynecological medicine that comes out of Oriental medicine, where women, as we were discussing earlier, women come in with their menstrual complaints and imbalances in the menstrual cycle. So much of these gynecological treatments are really forms of prevention, because they look at the imbalances that are creating these in the body, that are creating the signs and symptoms that are troubling the client. So many of these symptoms are rooted in a liver imbalance, as we were talking about earlier. So some of these formulas that have been classically used to restore a woman's menstrual cycle to balance, to restore a woman to hormonal balance, these formulas clear the liver, detoxify the liver, they strengthen the spleen and stomach, they boost blood production and blood circulation to the ovaries. So this, just that form of medicine that is used to treat what we might refer to as everyday forms of menstrual imbalances, they are actually forms of prevention. In other words, staying healthy and in balance is a form of prevention. It's the best form of prevention for things like breast cancer and cancers altogether. Fundamentally, what are we talking about? Fundamentally, we're talking about an inflammatory process in the body brought on by this pattern of stagnation and toxification. And there are so many great herbal medicines that come out of Chinese medicine that treat and clear the inflammatory process in the body. And that's really the problem. When this inflammatory process becomes chronic in these particular areas, the body's own defense system starts trying to deal with this area of stagnation and deal with this infection by a toxin. That inflammatory process gets going, and it's chronic, and it leads to trouble down the line. So prevention. We're always talking about prevention in Oriental medicine. Keep the liver functioning well. Keep the stomach and
spleen. Wait. Let's stop there. What do we do to keep the liver functioning well?
Well, the first thing we want to do is make sure that there is free flow in the liver, as we have been discussing. And that means being sensitized to our emotional states, being able to release these emotions on a regular basis, dealing with the physical stresses and challenges of life, learning how to relax, how to release. These intangible abilities to relax and release and restore the body to free flow are absolutely critical.
I need to get real practical here, because I want people listening to have strategies. Okay, so are we talking about, number one, maybe incorporating meditation, relaxation, yoga, tai chi, things like that that actually help the flow of these energies and can help release the emotional tensions and stressors that we're carrying? Would that be recommended?
Absolutely recommended. And these forms of exercise itself, just simple aerobic exercise, is such a great release of emotion and stress. And then you have these forms of conscious exercise that come from the East, Tai Chi, Hatha Yoga, Qigong. These were systems of exercise that were developed to do this very thing. Release the liver, release all of the energy held in the liver, and restore free flow to the liver. And then meditation, deep relaxation. There are legion of studies out there now showing the direct correlation between meditation and health. Why? Because the body goes into a deeply rejuvenative state when it relaxes. What's the most rejuvenating thing we do every day? We go to sleep. We turn it off. We go into deep sleep. The body is allowed to rest and relax and release. And, you know, in the go-go Western world, many of these things can be lost in the demands to perform and function and pay the bills. But, exercise, these forms of exercise, hatha yoga, qigong, tai chi, meditation, deep relaxation, it can be just lying on the floor in your home for a half an hour, just turning on soft, relaxed music and dropping into a deep state of relaxation, the heart itself will attune to that calming music, to that calming half hour, and the body will be rejuvenated. So that's exactly what I'm talking about.
So everyone, so if anyone is dealing with cancer, that's a must. But it's also really a strategy we need to incorporate to create a healthy, harmonious body in the world at any stage. And of course, you know, I'm a big believer in teaching our kids this in kindergarten, you know. Okay, so let's talk about food. What are some of the foods that support the body and the free flow of energy and is harmonious for the emotional state and also to help with detoxification?
Well, I like this idea that if we maintain the blood pH at 7.3, it's very difficult for cancers to form, perhaps impossible. That the alkalinity, the acid-alkaline balance in the body is absolutely critical. When the body becomes too acidic, it sets the stage for the development of cancers. Why? As we have been discussing, that acidity becomes a form of toxicity in the body. So the right foods are going to be the foods that keep the blood pure. The more junk food we put into the body, the more potential toxicity there is to infect an area of stagnation. And again, the studies have been done. They're absolutely out there. It is the polyphenols in fruits and vegetables, which are understood to be the primary cancer-fighting ingredient. It's these clean, natural, wholesome, organic foods, a vegetable-based diet that allows the blood to remain pure, allows the body and the liver to continually detoxify the body without there being an excessive buildup of toxemia. So diet is absolutely critical. Good food, fruits and vegetables, greens. People know I'm always talking about these green smoothies. I take a green smoothie every morning loaded with organic greens, full of nitric oxide precursors that not only tonify the cardiovascular system, they cleanse the blood. So diet is absolutely critical, and there's nothing really that mysterious about it. Junk food, it is adding toxins to the body. Pure food does not add toxins to the body and allows for the blood to remain pure and for the blood to remain freely flowing. The more toxins the blood absorbs, the thicker the blood becomes, the more inhibited the blood flow becomes, and the more stagnation we see in the body.
Okay, well, I think that makes common sense for most of us.
Say something else about that, which is, but there are studies that come out of China about the use of ginseng. It's very interesting. The more people use ginseng, the lower the cancer rates they have. Well, why is that happening? Well, one of the tenets in Oriental medicine, which is so critical to the health maintenance and longevity and cancer prevention, is to keep the stomach and spleen function healthy and strong. It's what we call in Oriental medicine the central qi, the central energy in the body that digests food, that manufactures blood, that keeps our body strong and toned. When we become depressed, you know how everything collapses down towards the earth? Well, the use of ginseng just strengthens that central qi. Its primary function is it nurtures and strengthens that central qi. It keeps the digestive function strong. There are whole schools of medicine that came out of ancient China where they pointed to dysfunctions in the stomach and spleen, problems in the digestive tract, were the source of all of this chronic inflammation that created all kinds of other diseases. So keep that liver, keep the diet strong, but keep the stomach and spleen strong.
And that's a big problem these days because we have very compromised gut health. We have a long history of antibiotics. We have a long history of toxic foods like gluten foods and wheat. I hardly see anyone that has a healthy, functioning, non-inflamed, leaky gut condition.
Exactly. You're seeing all of these things, and one of the reasons is not only poor diet and all the stresses and difficulties we've been talking about, but it's understood in Oriental medicine that the more liver stress is actually generated in the body, that the primary pattern, the primary path that this inflammatory, stressful pattern created by the liver, the primary path it takes is right into the gut. So when we become stressed out and we're emotionally unhappy and upset and we're full of negative emotions, that negative chemistry is being pushed down into the gut. And these leaky gut syndromes, these digestive imbalances, well, if you look at the early Chinese spleen and stomach school, the great doctors from that school are going to say all of your difficulties are rooted right there in that digestive dysfunction, in that digestive imbalance. And yes, it's constant. It's chronic in so many people.
Right. So we need to really support our gut health. So you recommend things like fermented foods and digestive enzymes and probiotics?
Yes, all of those things and good food. The human digestive system was built to run on good food. The human digestive system was not built to run on the stuff that's coming out of manufacturing factories.
Yeah.
An early human being, an infant, can live on one food, it's milk, because the digestive system is not yet ready to deal with anything solid. So a human infant lives on milk, and then that digestive system develops, and it can begin to start dealing with solid foods. So I recommend all these things, and before it gets too late in the show here, this is one area where herbal medicine is so profound. There are so many great, great herbal medicines that can be used to maintain digestive function and to clear the inflammatory processes that really are rooted in the gut. I mean, we all know with a kind of gastric response that can take place in the gut. And let me talk about some of these medicines for a moment here. These berberine herbs, there are these herbs in nature, like coptis and golden seal and barberry. There are these berberine-rich herbs. They tend to be yellow and gold in color. These are nature's most powerful anti-inflammatory herbs. And these herbs are used today in Chinese oncology hospitals. They are used to treat cancer. They are used today in Oriental medicine to prevent things like breast cancer. They are used to heal stomach ulcers and infections and inflammation. And the interesting thing about these berberine herbs is there is some really wonderful modern research being done today on berberines, particularly at the New York Medical College. They are doing major research on these berberine ingredients. And they have discovered and determined that the berberines, these berberine herbs, this berberine is one of the few truly life-extending substances that they have tested. The berberines actually change the messaging in the cell nucleus, telling it to continue to live rather than to die. And the research at the New York Medical College is also showing that the berberines, among the few substances that they have tested and shown to be truly life-preserving, the berberines are not only truly effective in prolonging the cell of the life of a cell, but the berberines actually are tumor shrinking. Now, they're proving in a modern laboratory what Chinese clinicians knew hundreds of years ago. These herbs help to shrink tumors. So these berberine herbs can be not only a part of treating, of a regime for treating things like breast cancer, but they should be used for prevention. And if people go to my website, TB Medicine, they will notice that I have a formula there called breast care. The breast care formula is right out of these integrated oncology hospitals. This is a formula that's used to treat breast cancer, and it's used to prevent breast cancer, and the formulas contain berberines. I also have a formula called Phyto Gold, Plant Gold, Phyto, P-H-Y-T-O, Gold. This is a concentrated berberine formula. These berberine herbs are some of the primary cancer-fighting ingredients in nature, and I'm always trying to educate people to use these things as preventatives, and they clear infection. They are used to treat things like leaky gut. They are used to treat these stressed-out inflammatory livers when women come into the clinic and they're showing all of these signs of imbalances in their menstrual cycles. These herbs are wonders. They are true longevity herbs. They are true tumor-shrinking herbs. The research is showing that. And everybody should know about these things and be using them in some form or another in their regimes, both to prevent and to treat.
So that's really a good point that I just want to bring up. So if women want to learn more about some of the herbal formulas that you personally formulate and get a consultation, first of all, it starts with a consultation to find out what they really need and if it needs to be personalized, a formula, that would be a really effective strategy to use to support their healing and cooperation with other things they may be doing, and to just support and strengthen these systems and pathways. Do you want to make any other comments about that?
Well, this is one of the great virtues of Oriental medicine, is we can examine the body in a non-invasive way, pulse diagnosis, tongue diagnosis, by interviewing the person. I know a great doctor in medical school once said that if you're willing to listen to the patient for 1 hour, you'll get 95% of the diagnosis, if you're just willing to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how Chinese medicine works. We listen to the person, we examine the person, and we can get a picture in that moment of how the body is going out of balance. And then we can create a regime to bring the body back into balance. And this is one of the diagnostic virtues of Oriental medicine. One of the other virtues of Oriental medicine is that it offers safe and effective non-invasive treatments that can be combined with Western treatments for more challenging health conditions like breast cancer. And, from my point of view, no person should be undergoing chemotherapy or radiation treatment without having a full regime of support regime that supports the body. Now, I know in some medical establishments they tell their clients not to do this, but this is absolutely wrong. I mean, the combined use of traditional and modern medicine generates the best outcomes. Again, the research is there if people are willing to look.
Well, this is the end of a really fascinating show, Angelo. Thank you for all your wisdom. If people want to learn more about some of your formulations and consultations with you, they can go up to tbmedicine.com. I personally love your formulas. I've been using them for years as part of my preventative strategy for healing and youthing. So thank you for the great work you're doing. And
thank you.
And to everyone listening, thank you for joining me for another really interesting conversation about a topic that is so relevant for all of us. Take care and remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.